We'll be taking a look at your pet's behavior next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and really pleased to welcome back Patricia McConnell of Black Earth, Wisconsin, adjunct associate professor of zoology at the UW-Madison. She and I have worked together for many years on radio programs, and I'm really pleased to have you back.
Oh, it's good to see you, Larry. You look great.
Well, you look great, too. Just back from, not too far back from a trip to Africa.
Just back from an animal behavior-focused safari in Kenya and Botswana. And we saw our goal, our dream, our hope was to see African wild dogs, one of the world's most endangered species. And as a naturalist told me, it's a gift to see wild dogs. And we did, Larry. Not only did we see them, we spent the morning with them. We saw a litter of 12 or 14 puppies,
wow.
And we got to watch the lead researcher, John McNutt, radio collar the breeding male. He darted him, missed the first two times, by the way. It was so exciting. Everybody had their breath held. But he successfully darted the third attempt and then radio collared Jones, mm-hmm. the breeding male of the pack. And we got to go down and touch him and look at his.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a highlight of life. It was great.
Well, another highlight is a new CD that you've got out on dog play. And that's something I kind of want to focus a little bit on, which is understanding play between dogs and between dogs and people.
It's such a big important. It's a fun topic. You know, play is so fun. We think of it as being sort of fun, and sometimes that bleeds into frivolous, but mm-hmm. it's really important. It can make or break your bond with your dog. You can use it to teach your dog to be the dog you want him or her to be. The dark side is that you can end up sitting in my office crying because your dog bit a child on the face because of inappropriate play. So it's a big deal. It deserves a lot of attention.
So how do you define appropriate and inappropriate play then?
Well, there's the rub, actually. We could spend the entire time. Scientists have been pulling their hair out about how you define play, just play. How do you define play? It's very difficult because so much of play are actions that are seen in other contexts, especially fighting,
mm-hmm.
Predation. You know, dogs mm-hmm. pick up their toy and they shake it as if it was a mouse they were trying to kill. And they, just like kids play wrestle on the ground, you know, dogs will play wrestle and chase and do mock biting. So that the distinction between appropriate and inappropriate play between dogs is a really important one. I actually had a client once who called me. I drove all the way from Black Earth to the east side of town. It was like an hour-long drive. Mm-hmm. They had two golden retrievers, and they said they were fighting. And I went out, and we stood in the yard, and we watched these two goldens, and I didn't say it, but I thought, they're not fighting, they're playing, that'll be $100. Because I didn't charge him. I ended up not charging him, but the dogs were playing. They were not mm-hmm. fighting. And the core of the difference are sort of three main cores to look at.
Okay.
One is, if you're watching two dogs play, and by the way, appropriate play is usually between two dogs. It's a duo.
Mm-hmm.
Are both dogs equally happy to be there? You know, mm-hmm. if you observe, the big key is to observe carefully, to really watch carefully. And if you do, sometimes you'll see that one individual seems to be trying to get away or is always over on their back and not happy about it and runs behind a chair or is basically not having as good a time, doesn't initiate things. Sometimes you'll see them playing really, really boisterously and there's a lot of growling and teeth showing and it looks like, ooh, is this trouble? But if they're both equally having a good time, it's fine. So one, are they both willing partners? Two, are both dogs self-handicapping? And everybody knows what I mean by that. We mm-hmm. do it in play all the time. Larry, you have a daughter in first grade. When mm-hmm. you play with her, you self-handicap. You don't use your full power.
No.
You don't use your full strength. And so when my older Lassie would play with my younger border collie, Willie, when he was a baby, she taught him tug of war. It looked like she was actually actively teaching it to him, which is controversial, by the way, whether animals can do that, but I think she was. But she would dampen her ability to pull back. You know, he'd get it mm-hmm. in his mouth. And so now that she's old, and he's three, now he self-handicaps.
Oh.
So watch to see that the dogs are self-handicapping. Are their bites inhibited? Are they being thoughtful and careful about the way they use their power and strength? And the other issue is arousal. That's the biggest problem in dog play. It's just as it is in human play. You know that saying, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
How many sports events can we think of in which either the players or even the audience get so emotionally aroused that they become aggressive? You know, they lose it. The only hockey game I went to, I've never gotten to one again, because the people behind me got in a fight and ended up falling into me, spilling beer on me. Oh, and I ended up in the middle of a brawl, and I was like, I paid for this. I'm not a brawling kind of gal. I just didn't enjoy it. So what happens when we get aroused, which is part of the fun part of play, you mm-hmm. know, you sort of lose some inhibitions, and you get just sort of excited and aroused, and wee, you know, you get that wee feel. It's so much fun. Well, because of that lack of inhibition, if you fall over a certain line of emotional arousal, it can turn into something else. And because inhibition is blocked, you can end up being aggressive. Same thing happens with dogs. And so watch the dogs playing. Is one of them, does their vocalizations change? Do their growls start getting deeper or higher mm-hmm. or more rapid or louder? Does somebody's actions start getting jerky? The trick is to watch them when they're playing happily. And be really a great observer, and then start looking for changes. And you can see an increase in intensity. When it happens, it's like, let's go.
Time out.
Recess is over.
Well, I tell you what, we have lots of callers online, and I want to continue with this thread through the show, but let's turn to Jerry in Argyle up first. Jerry, hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a dog. She's about two. They told us she was a blue heeler mix. I'm guessing border collies in there, too. She's a herding dog.
Okay.
And the first day my wife was bringing her home, she stopped by her parents' house, and my brother-in-law has a big black lab, and she was just a little puppy. And the black lab just took after her, scared her up under the van. And she was afraid. Well, we got her home, and we haven't had also an older beagle. And the older beagle, I was kind of amused. I listened to your program when you were on Saturdays forever. And the beagle just didn't even acknowledge that Sparky existed. She just ignored her completely.
I see nothing.
Yeah, there's no other dog. But now they get along okay.
Okay.
There's not any fighting, and they play a little bit every once in a while, but the old one doesn't feel like playing, really. She chases rabbits. That's her play.
Yeah. So what's the problem, then?
Just recently, we had a gentleman stop by the road, and he had his dog in the car with him and put the dog on a leash and brought it out. And my dog acted like she was going to try to kill that.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And she doesn't want... She doesn't really like other dogs other than the one that she lives with.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, if she had this traumatic experience as a puppy, and that's something, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, isn't it? But it's a good reminder. I'm really glad you told us the story, because it's a great reminder to everybody, is that little puppies at that age, usual age that you bring them back, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, that's a critical period of socialization. And if they get traumatized during that... can have a bigger effect, and especially, you know, first impression, same things. Like, what was her first impression of an unfamiliar dog? It's going to scare her. So I'm super conservative about young puppies. So that's just, in the future, that's something to keep in mind. So she got traumatized when she was a pup during this critical period, and she probably hasn't met a lot of other dogs as she was growing up. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind also. Again, hindsight being 20/20 is it's really important to try and get dogs out and about to a good, well-managed puppy socialization class. Be careful of ones that just sort of throw the puppies in the middle and say, good luck.
Yeah.
There is some hope, and it partly depends on how important it is to you, because it is going to take some time. There's no quick fix here, but there are a couple of different methods you can use. I have one described in Feisty Fido, and I use this on my own dog. My own new border collie actually came as a puppy, aggressive to unfamiliar dogs as a puppy. And so what you do basically is you have to manage it really carefully. You never let her have unmanaged introduction to other dogs. You set her up. So first teach her, I like to use operant conditioning, teach her a cue. That means turn around and look at me and I'll give you a treat, or I'll play a with you with a toy. Toys can work best if they're real toy-oriented because it's hard to be fearful and playful at the same time. So Willie loved to play with a particular toy, so I taught him watch. Willie, watch! And whenever I'd say watch, he'd turn and look at me, and I'd play tug with him with his favorite toy. And so first I taught that. Then I started asking him to watch me when he saw another dog, but that dog was a long way away, so I managed it really carefully. You know, I didn't just sort of blunder into other dogs. I thought very carefully. I had friends come, now you go over there 100 yards away. So you manage it, and every time he saw another dog, I'd say, watch. He'd turn to me, and we'd play tug. He became classically conditioned to associate seeing another dog with feeling good. So gradually, I can't go through all the steps now, but gradually the idea is you increase the exposure, you decrease the distance. And so now when Willie sees another dog he doesn't know, he's like, ooh, look, it's another dog. I would never take him to a dog park, you know? And so you're probably never going to be able to do that with your dog, but you might be able to manage it. So,
and what was the, you mentioned your...
There's a booklet, Feisty Fido. They're also, you know, I don't know where you are in Madison. There's some Feisty Fido classes, the good, a dog's best friend, the good... A lot of the good dog training facilities now have classes for dogs who are uncomfortable with unfamiliar dogs. So that's another, you might want to look in your area to see if you can find a class.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Nancy in Milwaukee will go to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a 19-year-old cat who was just diagnosed with hyperthyroid, and the vet said she also thought she might have a little dementia. Because she will come out of where she sleeps at night and kind of yowl and then go back in.
Yeah.
But what the problem is now is we have stainless steel feeding dishes for her because she has cat acne. And she will bang on the water dish. She used to do it when she wanted to be fed. And now she's just doing it in the middle of the night and splashing the water all over until it's empty. We used to think she was trying to see if there was water in there. But it just seems to be getting worse. I don't know what to do.
This is a tough one because at this age, with hyperthyroidism, the possible beginning of some feline dementia, that starts to get to be one of those problems that probably has several different causes and might not be something you can completely turn around just because she's 19. Isn't that great? She's 19.
Yeah.
That's so great.
She's a very good cat.
Bless her heart. What's her name?
Sage? Yes.
Oh, okay. So there are a couple things I do. One, and I know this probably sounds simplistic and almost possibly foolish, I would take her water up. I just would. I would just take that problem away. Just I would manage it logistically. But I would also talk to my vet. If she does potentially have the beginning stages of dementia, there is medication for that. So you can talk to your veterinarian about that because that's something that could be treated. You might also want to look at alternative adjunctive medicine. There's a tremendous amount of good background and research behind the positive effects of acupuncture. I have a Chinese medicine veterinarian. She's a DVM, and she specializes in acupuncture and Chinese herbs. I've seen that help older animals quite a bit. So I would do those three things. I would fix it logistically. You might want to see if you could set up a sleeping place for her, maybe a warm place. If she's hyperthyroid, she might really want to be on something that's warm. Some people use heating pads as a way to attract a cat, an older cat, to somewhere comfy to sleep. You have to be careful with them, safety issues, electricity, et cetera.
Right, sure.
But that's something else you might want to think about. But yeah. I would take away the water. I would look at Western medicine for dementia, and I would look at adjunctive medicine as well.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, as we talk about dog play and all kinds of animal behavior issues with her here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take your calls. If you have a question for Patricia McConnell, the number 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll turn to Stu next in Appleton. Stu, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Patricia. Patricia, welcome back, and it's really nice to hear your voice with Larry in this time slot again. I'm glad you're taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
I've got a question about a very young cat. My wife and I recently adopted a young, sickly barn kitty. who was the runt of the litter and probably would have died had we not taken her back. And now we've got her back to health. She's probably now a bit better than 2 months old. And now that she's healthy, she's kind of full of herself and kind of kitten-like. And she plays with us often and has a nasty habit of turning the play into a little bit of biting. And I need some advice on what I can do to try and keep her from biting in play. And if, I mean, we've used the spray bottle technique and a no bite with a quick spritz of a spray bottle, and that gets her attention real quick. And now she understands where the spritz comes from. And when you say no bite, unless you have the bottle in your hand, she just gives you a dirty look and then tears a chunk out of your arm.
You know, people say, my pet is so smart, and I say, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
smart is not always good.
No.
You know, you are actually describing one of the problems that I commonly have seen with young animals who had to be taken out of the litter early. I think, and I'm speculating, I haven't seen good research on this, but it appears if you watch animals with their mother in a litter, they learn a tremendous amount about emotional inhibition, bite inhibition, arousal from their mothers, and also probably from their litter mates. So animals, puppies, kittens who are sick early on in life and have to be taken away or not raised with the others and need special care, I often see them being a little extra bitey. Now, was this the case with her? You said she's 2 months now. How old was she when you got her? Was she with her mother, her litter, etc.?
There were two litters on the farm in the barn. She was the runt, and I'm guessing, and I'm only speculating, we probably got her the vet. When the vet first saw her, he guessed that she was probably only 4 weeks old.
I was just going to say, I'll bet she was about 4 weeks old. So, because that's old enough to make it, you know, away from mom and get mean, but... Okay, so what do you do? So there are a couple of things you can do, and I understand about the spray bottle. I mean, that advice is out there everywhere, and they do. They instantly learn about there being a spray bottle, and if you have it in your hand, they do one thing, and if you don't, they do another. So you basically need to be a litter mate at the moment and let her know that if she bites too hard, the fun is over. So there are a couple of things you can do. One is if you're seated and she's on your lap, this sounds a little harsh, but I've never seen it hurt a kitten yet. You basically, if she bites you, you just stand up. You just stand up, and she sort of, you know, your lap's gone, mm-hmm. and so she's elsewhere. And something happens fast to sort of interrupt her behavior. The trick is to do it early on. Don't wait until the bite is over. And the bite's only going to last about a third of a second, so that means your timing has to be absolutely exquisite. So that's one thing to do. The other thing is to work really hard. This is the main thing I would do, is work really hard to refocus her onto toys.
Oh, I've tried that. And that usually has a pretty good effect.
Good.
One of those jingle balls that you flick with your finger across the room, and she instantly takes off after it.
And do you have those fishing pole toys?
Oh, I do. She loves it.
Okay. And so keep, you know, she's young yet, so she's definitely in a process of learning. So you have lots of opportunity to shape this and turn this around a little bit. So keep focusing on that. What I would suggest you do is I would keep a journal, really simple. Don't make it elaborate, because then if you're like me, you'll never do it. Just put hash marks somewhere easily accessible every time she bites you too hard. And start tracking, is she getting better? Because what you want to see is that, I would say, by 4 to 5 months, it should have 95% of should have dropped out of her repertoire. If it hasn't, you're going to probably need to see somebody and work with somebody one-on-one. But so keep track of how it's going. Look for it to gradually decrease. And if she bites too hard, you might want to try yelping. It works on some cats, some dogs, not others. Usually little kids can't do it. They don't have enough power. You're basically trying to get a startle response out of her.
I tried that once.
Did that work?
And that had good effect, too. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing more amusing than the look on a cat's face when you do that.
Well, that's worth something right there.
Yes, it is.
Especially after she's just hurt you. So the trick with yelping is they will habituate to it fast. If you yelp too little, or too little being not loudly enough, not powerfully enough, not abruptly enough, they'll habituate to it. If you do it too often, they'll habituate to it. So be thoughtful about when you do it. And right after you yelp, I want you to like get up and just leave. Just leave the room. So don't give her any kind of attention, because kids and cats are the same. It's like attention's still attention, even if it's negative. So try those things and track it and look to see how you are in a month or two.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn to Pat in East Troy next. Pat, hi to you.
Hi, Larry and Patricia. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Sure.
I've already talked to you once about this obstreperous young dog that I got 6 months ago today. I called her Honey, and oh, was that a mistake.
Yeah.
Should have been Devil Spawn right off the bat. She came to me because somebody turned her into the Chicago shelter saying, don't want, and now I know why.
Oh, dear, trouble on a stick, huh?
Well, I think she was turned in too late for me to get her in a puppy stage, but she still has an awful lot of habits, probably was taken away from her mother too soon.
Could be.
Bites, not maliciously, but hard.
Ooh.
And she's already knocked me down once. I'm elderly, but very solidly built. So having her knock me down was a matter of just knocking my feet out from under me, and down I went.
Whoa. Oh. What kind of dog?
Golden Retriever.
Okay.
A small size one. She's under 50 pounds, but oh, is she powerful.
And what does she eat? I'll tell you why I'm asking in a bit.
What does she eat?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you.
What
kibbles.
Does she eat? Kibbles?
Yeah.
What kind of kibble?
I tried her on several things because right off the bat, she got a couple of hot spots with the form of the kibbles that I was feeding my other elderly golden, who won't play with her. He just avoids her as much as possible.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, she needs somebody to play with her, and I'm too old, and he's much too old. So I need to know how I can get through to her. She's very intelligent. Too intelligent.
Yeah, that's a problem.
She's smarter than I am, I know. I need to be able to get her to come when I call her, but she's so anxious to circle four huge lots and get in the road when she escapes from her chain or from the leash. I can't get her to come for food or any kind of
really?
Bribery. She
okay.
just goes in circles.
Okay, what we have here is referred to in my notes as OOC, which is out of control.
Right? Yeah, OOC dog.
OOC. And sometimes the dog is out of their own control. It's not just that they're out of your control, they're out of their own control. And I wonder if some of that might be happening. You know,
yeah.
So I don't know where you got her, but some of the Goldens, you know, we all think of Goldens as being just a sweet, so many of them, they're so sweet and they're so loving. And there are some that they just don't, they didn't seem to get that emotional inhibition. They sort of mm-hmm. missed that particular lever, you know, in the brain. So they have a hard time inhibiting themselves. And 8 months is, frankly, it's the worst of all possible ages. It's the, quote, free to a good home in the country age, mm-hmm. as a friend of mine used to say. So here's the one thing I would do for sure if I were you. I don't know how easy this is for you. I would look to find someone in your area who could come and do a house call. I would get a trainer who could be your mentor and your coach, who could not just help train her, but help train you to work with her, because she sounds like the advanced model. Sounds like you're very dog wise, and this particular dog is just out of the bell curve. And, you know, it happens. It happens to people who've had dogs all their life, and then they get, you know,
the one,
right? And so, you know, dogs like that are challenges even to professional trainers. So you wouldn't hesitate to get a coach if you were trying to play tennis with the big girls, or, you know, mm-hmm. or so I would get a coach and somebody who could help you work with this dog, because there are a couple of things that could be going on. One is that she could just be one of those sort of wild dogs who just needs a little bit more training and a little bit more structure and a little more exercise. But she could have some other things going on. I've seen some of these wild dogs, they're on the wrong food. Sometimes when you switch their food, they actually do better. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't tell you about your dog now without having worked with her and probably having some good veterinarians look at her too, including some who do some, you know, holistic kind of work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it might be that she's on chicken and she should be on duck and potato. Or, I mean, I, you know, my young Willie, I can't feed him chicken or lamb. I raise lamb. I have lamb in the freezer. And can I feed them lamb? No. No, I can't, because he becomes impossible if I feed him lamb. If I feed him duck, potato, or beef, he's literally a different dog. So who knew, right? So that's a big deal. So I would get a coach because I think there's just more, you know, there's more that you need than I can tell you. I can tell you that with dogs like this, yes, they need exercise, but sometimes unstructured exercise just ends up hyping them up. So the old adage of your dog needs more exercise, you know, it turns out they don't get the right kind of exercise. They don't get it at the right time. Sometimes it just ends up hyping them up. So I would get a coach. I would get a mentor. I would think about the kind of exercise that you give her. I would not give her an opportunity to run free, by the way, at this age. You know, you said she laps around these yards. There's nothing you can do that beats freedom. I mean, every animal in the world, well, not every animal in the world, but dogs and people, we cherish our freedom. It's the most important thing in the world. If you take that away from people, it's the worst thing you can do to them, right? So it's hard to compete with running around free. Wee-haw, you know? So I would not give her that opportunity for a while. You know, I would fence her yard. I would take her out on a leash. I would find places for her to run. I would find her a playmate, too. Mm-hmm. I would see if you could find, just like parents find playmates for their kids, I would see if there was somewhere you could, you know, go to a class, find a trainer, link her up with a buddy so she can play really, really hard 3 times a week or so with a sort of a same size, same age, or same kind of play style dog. That's the most important part. Mm-hmm. So good luck. Hang in there.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. And she mentioned chain around the neck. I think the leader, how she takes her dog outside is probably important, Patricia.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Thanks, Larry. That's a really good comment. I didn't pick up on that, and I'm glad you did. Is I would never walk a dog like that on the choke or the training collar, sort of the loose chain that tightens as you pull, because it literally, the physics are such that it teaches your dog to pull harder and harder. I would, without question, I would get a body harness. But what's critical is that don't get the kind of harness where you put the leash on the top. That just makes them more able to pull you like a wagon. There's a kind of harness, Premier makes one called an Easy Walker. There's one made that's called a Sensation Harness, in which the leash fits in the front, right at the front of the dog's chest. They cannot pull you anywhere like they could with a leash around or attached to the collar. Dogs don't seem to mind it. There's also a head collar you can try. Some dogs mind them, some dogs don't, but you definitely need to get physics on your side. It's partly about equipment. Nobody would walk a horse with the wrong equipment, and you have the equivalent of, in that she's strong and powerful and needs, you need all the tools on your side, from training to good equipment. That's a good call, Larry. Thank you.
And thanks again, Pat, for calling. Good luck. Kurt in Bowdoin. Where are you from, Kurt?
Hello.
Oh, North Dakota.
Yeah, I drive over the road. I'm just passing through. I have two cats that steal.
Oh.
And two kittens, a male and a female, they're siblings, and they steal anything that's not tied down, and it's not really a problem. I find it mostly funny, other than they've taken my glasses when I'm in the shower, which is kind of inconvenient, and they've taken my wallet, but I pretty much know where they hide things. I just don't know why. I've owned cats my whole life. I've never had cats that steal.
So they take your socks or your watch or whatever, and they go and hide it somewhere.
Yeah, or they, it's funny as all get out. The male likes the little cap on my wife's spritz for her hair. And the way he carries it when he's running, he blows air through it and it whistles. So you can hear him running from the bathroom down to the basement where we have the room set up so he can go hide it. It's just a gaff.
Busted. That is a great story. It sounds like they have a cache. I mean, they take it to the same place every time. They have like a little cache of treasures.
Yeah, they have like three spots where they hide stuff, and they'll work together. I mean, one one will come up to, you know, to get pettings to keep you away from the other one while she goes in to steal a scarf.
Oh, that's so cool. That's not that common. I mean, it's not completely unheard of. But and certainly cats carry objects around a lot more than people often think they do. You can teach a lot of cats to fetch. A lot of cats are great fetchers. Larry, any of your cats fetch?
Tiger fetches. Tiger loves to fetch these rubber-coated jacks.
Yeah.
He will
run. The markers used to catch a frisbee, our kitten, prior to these two.
So cats and objects are not that unheard of. It's this caching in the same place. That's really fun. I think you should take a video and put it on YouTube.
Yeah.
We tried to get them the other day. We keep their food in this Iams box that seals, and we've been rationing them food because Cole's getting kind of chubby. He's kind of working the food as much as he can. He's getting a little bigger than we'd like.
Yeah, and good for you.
They work together to open the lid. It's just a gap.
That's what you ought to videotape for YouTube. But I will tell you, McConnell's Law, there's really only one. It's not really fun of people naming things after themselves. I don't know. It just seems sort of egotistical to me. But there is McConnell's Law. McConnell's Law is that if you have a behavioral problem with your animal, the guaranteed cure is that you buy a video recorder. You make sure the battery is charged. You make sure that the memory card, you know, has space. And then you try to video it. And if all of those things are true, they will not do
it. They won't do it.
So it's a very expensive but reliable way to eliminate a behavioral problem. Anyway, I love your story, Kurt. That's great.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Lynette in Richfield, we'll turn to you now. Hi.
Hi. Good morning or afternoon. I got a year-old puppy about 2 months ago as a playmate for my three-year-old dog. He was a little too rambunctious, so she's done a very good job of calming him down because she is extra hyper and wants to play constantly. Nothing seems to tire her out. So once in a while, I'll play with a laser pointer on the floor, and she will just keep going after that throughout the entire house, up the stairs, down the stairs, for a really long time. And I'm wondering if psychologically, if I'm potentially creating a monster.
With a laser pointer.
Right. Will she eventually, or could she psychologically eventually just get a little too obsessed with it?
Or
is it a good play toy?
No, it's not. And I'm so glad you're asking, because I can tell you that certified applied behaviorists like me hear laser toy and we just wince. I cannot tell you how many clients I've had whose animal became addicted. I mean, literally obsessed, clinical obsession, to the point where they would sit and stare at the wall waiting for a light to appear, or waiting for somebody to open up the door to the oven, because when they did, there was a reflection that created a piece of light. And so, these animals stopped eating. I see laser pointers and I just shiver. So animals do, some of them never do. I mean, obviously there are a lot of animals who play with laser pointers and never develop what are basically literally clinical kind of symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder, but some do. And so because I see the dark side, I'm just so conservative, and I would just take it right out of your repertoire. I know it's really fun. Animals really love them, but it can lead to animals becoming obsessed with looking for little pieces of light to appear and literally becoming dysfunctional.
Yeah. So.
So I'm glad you asked. Good for you. She had good instincts, didn't she? She was like, this is really fun, but.
And, you know, there's a related email here. Kate emailed us, and she says she has an active 8 or 9 year old dog. Lynette was talking about getting another dog as a playmate and so forth. Her 8 or 9 year old dog is a mix, about 60 pounds. She's alone about 12 hours a day because of jobs. And in the evening, she runs and runs outside with us, and usually enjoys playing with other dogs. We're considering getting another dog to keep her company. Don't know whether this is a good idea or not, or whether she's too old to have a new playmate. What would you recommend?
You know, it depends on her. I mean, it really does. It's like if you just randomly bring another individual in, it's not that different than having one of your friends open the door and throw some person you never met inside and saying, here's the person who's going to live with you now. We thought you were lonely. And you're like, So here's what it depends on. Does your dog love other dogs? Some dogs love other dogs at the dog park, but not in their house. So how is she with other dogs?
Yeah.
That's one question.
Yeah.
Is she comfortable with them in the house? Is she possessive of you, you know, with the owner? Does she not want other dogs to come near you? So is she going to be stressed about, I'm going to lose the attention of my owner? Is she playful? Does she still want to play with other dogs? If so, what kind of dog would be best for her? Would it be best to use the sort of standard advice of getting a different sex? Would it be best to get a puppy or another older dog? So it depends so much on her. But the main question is not just would a playmate be good for her, but who is she and what does she want? You know, some dogs just yearn for another dog to play with. And there's some interesting research, by the way, that was done in Ann Arbor by Camille Ward. She did a PhD on play behavior in puppies, and she found she's followed these litters every week and then every month as they got older and older and got them all back together again. What she found is that they developed play preferences as they got older. They started playing with the same friends. So they'd be apart for a month, they'd all get back together, and the same two would play together as they got older and older. And it brought up, I thought, a really interesting question. Is it, you know, do dog need best friends? You know, do they need buddies? You know, do they need best friends? And I think it varies dog to dog, but so, again, it depends on that dog. Is she the kind of dog who wants a best friend to play with or not? So those are the questions to ask.
And we have many more questions, and we will take those questions. Patricia McConnell, our guest here. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking animal behavior today with Patricia McConnell. Patricia's been
I'm still here. I'm still breathing.
Associate professor. Adjunct Associate Professor of Zoology at UW-Madison. She has a new DVD out. We started talking about, we'll get back to that a little bit, called Dog Play, Understanding Play Between Dogs and Between Dogs and People. And she's also co-author with Karen London of Play Together, Stay Together, Happy and Healthy Play Between People and Dogs. It's published by McConnell Publishing Limited. And lots of other work. Lots of books.
Oh, it's fun. I love to write. I do love to write. And, you know, I'm writing a blog now. And I think I've told you this before. I always thought that was a word that you should, like, say I went to the doctor's office and had a blog removed. I mean, it's not a great word, Larry, is it? But I love writing it. And it's really fun. I get great comments from people who read it all over the world. So join the conversation. It's at theotherendoftheleash.com. And I didn't think I'd enjoy it so much, but I love writing it. It's a great way to stay connected.
TheOtherEndOfTheLeash.com. And, you know, I bet in that blog, and in fact, I'm almost sure in that blog, that you have taken up the issue of guilty looks in dogs. And, you know, that, and we all know what that means, that I've seen dogs with that guilty look on their face. Do they feel guilt or do they understand that they've disobeyed?
Well, what a great question. And here's what I've always said, and all the trainers and applied behaviorists I know have always said, is that, you know, so often somebody will come home from work and their dog is urinated on the carpet, right, in the living room. And they'll say, I know he knows better because he looks guilty. And what we've always said is, no, that's not guilt. He's being deferential. It's like waving a red flag or a white flag, you know, like, you know, I'm the Red Cross here, because the dog has learned that the owner's going to be angry. So they're basically trying to ameliorate your anger or your response. And so Alexandra Horowitz did a study, a really good study that she published in Behavioral Processes relatively recently, in which she did a great study. And she looked at this very issue, and basically what she did, it's pretty simple. She had dogs and owners. She only picked dogs who knew the state command. So in a room, the owner was to put a piece of food down quite a few feet away from the dog, so the dog would have to get up to get it. The owner was to say, sit and stay, and then leave the room. The experimental part was that the experimenter manipulated whether the dog broke the stay or not, or to the perception of the owner. So sometimes the owner would come back. The food was always gone. The researcher always picked up the food and then told the owner, your dog broke stay and ate the food, or your dog did not. And then told the owner if the dog had disobeyed, the dog was to be scolded, just verbally, in whatever way the owner scolded the dog. Then she tracked the expressions of the dog. And basically what she found was there was no correlation between the dog's behavior and the face of the dog, or the posture of the dog, or the, quote, guilty look. The guiltier, to human attributions, the guiltier the dog looked, that was correlated completely with the scolding from the human. And the, quote, guiltiest looking dogs were the dogs who had been obedient but were being scolded. So it beautifully confirms what most of us have been arguing for decades and decades and decades, is know your dog doesn't, quote, know better. Know your dog's not guilty. I do have a bone to pick with this article, though. I was shocked. In the introduction, Horowitz says that ethologists make attributions about emotions in animals, which without question many, many scientists do, that the basic emotions like fear, anger, happiness are absolutely not exactly the same, but are indeed very primitive states that are shared by humans and animals like dogs, for example. But she goes on to say the ethologists, like McConnell, say that dogs are feeling guilt when they do things like put their heads down and tails down, which is the opposite of anything I've ever said. So I'm a little
perturbed.
I'm a tad peeved, Larry. So I actually emailed her this morning and said, "What is it I said? Where that you made that attribution?" Because we're all talking about misattribution. So I will keep you posted. I'm going to blog about this next week, by the way.
Okay.
So after Labor Day, I'm going to write a much longer thing about guilt, this article, and emotions in dogs.
And that's at theotherendoftheleash.com.
You got it.
All right. Well, let's turn to Pat in La Crosse. Pat, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. I want to thank you for your program, and we missed you on Saturday.
No, thank you.
Now, we have a male cat. The mother died. She had a litter. The cats were just whining and whining, so I put him up on the bed with the father. He lifts his back leg and lets him nurse off her.
Oh.
I mean, he trained him how to go bathroom. He's done it all. You know, and we're not quite sure what's, you know, I know he's for contentment, but I've never seen a male cat do this before.
You know, I have heard anecdotally a lot of reports of people who said their male cat became very parental. And it's really interesting to me, because if you look at the ethology or the behavior in the natural environment of domestic cats, by the way, some of the people on the Africa safari, Larry, they saw African wildcats, the progenitor of our house cat, who looks almost exactly like a tabby cat. I was not there. I didn't get to see it. I was so jealous. But nonetheless, if you look at the behavior of cats, feral cats and wild hypergenders, the males don't participate that much in the care of the young. But, you know, they don't read the books. You know, I've always said that about cats. They pretty much do what they want. And it's not uncommon that some males become very parental. You see that in dogs, too. So there's, you know, I think it's important all of us know that animals are individuals. You know, even fish are individuals. You know, it turns out the research is really clear. Fish have personalities, you know, they're very different. So there's a whole bunch of male cats out there apparently who are very parental. And bless their little hearts
Bless their hearts is absolutely right.
Lucky that somebody took over, because it's tough to raise a litter without an individual of the same species. I mean, it's really not always critical, but it can be really helpful. So lucky litter, lucky kittens.
And thanks for that story, Pat. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Paul in Duluth, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Thank you. And
Paul, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Hey, here, just a minute. I didn't want to get cauliflower ears, so I put the phone down.
There you are. Hi, Paul.
Patricia, it's lovely to hear your voice again. I have an elderly, fabulously beautiful chow girl, and she's beginning to develop what I think are the early signs of dementia. And one thing I've noticed is she's always been extremely protective of me. But I've developed some health problems myself, and what I find is that I will, like, get up, at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, and I'm having a little trouble getting back to sleep. And she sleeps right next to my bed. So I'll, say, well, rather than, toss and turn in bed, I'm going to just go in the living room and just sit and maybe read for, a little bit. And she is literally blocking me every step of the way down the hall from the bedroom to the living room. It's like either she doesn't want me to go into the living room or whatever. And the only other real overt thing I've noticed is that when she spends the bulk of the day outside this time of year on my porch. And when I call her in for to eat or whatever, she'll kind of stare off into the distance as if we're going to go down the steps, out into the yard.
Hmm.
And I say, Cassie, come on this way, and then she'll come in, and I. You know, she in every other regard, she's quite healthy. She's got a great appetite and
good.
How old is she?
She is 15.
Oh my goodness! Oh, that's really old for a chow.
Yeah, and
really,
and,
really old for a chow.
And I love her with all my heart.
Yeah.
I heard a statistic a while back that over 20,000 people in this country get injured by tripping over their pets every year. And
so you're worried about that.
Well, in the middle of the night,
You're walking. Yeah,
I
okay.
hear you. Yeah, it can be a danger, especially if you have health problems yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm not at all surprised to hear 20,000 people a year. I'm surprised it's not more, frankly. given how many millions and millions, 48 million dogs or something or whatever it is now, I think more actually that are out there. So a couple of things. One, about this blocking behavior, I think you're right. I think there's no question that she's trying to stop you from going downstairs. The question is, all we can do is guess why. If she's 15, it might hurt her to go up and down the stairs, especially downstairs is harder on older dogs than upstairs.
Excuse me, this is not going up and down stairs. This is just walking down the hall.
Okay. Oh, I misunderstood. I thought I heard stairs. Sorry. So not stairs, probably not about that. I can tell you that my old dog, Lassie, she sleeps right beside my bed as well. And if we're off schedule, she's like, what? What? I mean, she doesn't like it. No. She's old, and old mammals tend to like their routines. So she well may literally just be like, I want to be with you, but I don't want to have to get up and move. It's more comfortable here. So I wouldn't be surprised if she's doing that. You could try, if you want to, you could give her... maybe start stuffing a Kong with some food, put it in the freezer, stuff a Kong, get the right size Kong, stuff it. And then when you do want to go, just lay it down in her doggy bed and see if that'll keep her right there. So that's one possibility.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of her looking sort of in the distance when you call her to come, there's so many things that could be. I mean, one is to think about her hearing. Right now, my old 15-year-old dog, she's lost a lot of her hearing in one ear. So when I call her to come, she looks the other way because she can still hear, but she can't localize sound. So she doesn't know where I am. So if she does that, if she moves her head sort of fast, she might be losing hearing in one ear and not the other and not be able to localize sound. If she just sort of moves it slowly, she might be saying, I don't really know if I want to come in now. I was sort of settled. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. If you do think she has early stage dementia, again, as I mentioned before, I do want you to talk to your veterinarian because there is an approved medication for canine cognitive dysfunction, which is what it's called. So that's something to think about. In terms of tripping, if you if you give her a stuffed toy like this Kong, then you can eliminate that problem. Or else, I don't know, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I just read in bed, and I know that's against some of the rules about what you're supposed to do, but I read
too.
In my own same bed, and then I go back to sleep. So you could always try that in a pinch.
That's probably, well, that's what I do.
Is that what you do too?
I read, if I can't get back to sleep, sometimes I'll read in bed, and usually there's a particular book whose title I won't name. I can read a page of that and fall immediately
to
sleep.
Don't you want to know?
The first chapter of Gravity's Rainbow I've read.
Oh, that's famous.
I know, but I hated it.
Well, yeah, but that's why I put you to sleep, isn't it? Well, you know, I know the standard. We're talking about behavior here. We're talking about animal behavior. We're just on people now. The standard advice of if you can't sleep, you're only supposed to sleep in your bed. You don't read in your bed. You don't watch television in your bed. I'll tell you, that so does not work for me. That so does not work for me.
Thanks again for calling, Paul. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Animal behavior on our minds today as we visit with Patricia McConnell, we've been having a lot of fun talking with her, and a lot of questions about dogs, dog play, a little about dog aggression, a little bit about kitties. We've talked about kitties on the show today. You may have a question, too. Join us at 800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And Karen in La Crosse has been waiting a long time, so we're going to go to Karen right now. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
About a little over a month ago, we adopted a little beagle from the Humane Society. She's about 4 years old. She weighs about 15 pounds. And the Humane Society did warn us that she seems to be very shy and timid. When we got her home, for the first 2 weeks, she hid. We didn't even see her. And the other weird thing about her, she is getting more comfortable with us. She has learned her name. She will come to me, but there's no bribing this dog. She doesn't care about treats. And the other weird thing about her is that she never barks.
She's probably too scared to. Oh, do you know anything about her background? She sounds like the kind of dog that was kept in a crate or on a line or in a barn for all of her life.
She was a stray that the Humane Society picked up.
Okay.
that nobody claimed.
Yeah, so we don't know. She well may have been a dog that somebody used for breeding and just kept on a chain in the barn. It's just painfully common. And those dogs that didn't get any socialization at all go through these critical periods and don't get any exposure to other dogs or other people, and they are just profoundly shy. So you are so sweet to take this dog. The most important thing I can tell you is don't rush things. Her entire world has completely changed, and her brain literally was not wired to deal with it. Brains of animals who develop in impoverished environments don't have the same amount of dendritic branching. They're literally structured differently, and they can't handle change or stress as well as a normal individual. So you're really good to go slow and be patient. Don't expect too much of her. Don't force anything on her. Don't worry about the not barking. We all know that beagles bark, right? But that's normal, happy, well-socialized beagles. She's probably just nowhere close to being what we would call a normal individual yet. The barking may come. Usually it takes these kind of animals 1 to 2 years.
Okay.
One to 2 years. You could talk to a veterinary behaviorist about using some kind of anti-anxiety medication. There are pluses and minuses of that. If she doesn't seem to be suffering, and she's coming out of it and she's coming along, then just let her go at her own pace. If she doesn't want food, she's probably too scared. What you can start doing is start trying to have her associate wonderful things with you without any social pressure. So when you offer her a special food treat, don't lean towards her. Don't reach your hand out. Turn away so she's not seeing even your face, and throw a piece of chicken behind you. So she gradually starts being able to associate food with you or with your husband or with somebody else in the family. Don't ask a lot of her. Having another dog around can be profoundly helpful. So I don't know if you have a friend who has another dog who's really good with other dogs. Very often these dogs are comfortable with dogs but not with people, and the other dog can act as a social facilitator. So that's something else.
We do take her to the dog park. She absolutely loves dogs.
Great.
And actually, she seems like a completely different dog when she is around dogs.
Yeah.
She's not afraid of people.
This is a dog who was raised in a kennel with other dogs and never saw people. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. Or never saw anybody but sort of one person who came to feed and clean up, hopefully, anyway. Yeah. So one thing you might want to do is find somebody you really like who has a dog you really like who's very polite and have them come into your house.
Yeah.
Because that's, you want that dog, that social facilitation only works if the dog is there. So have other dogs come in the house so your little beagle's like, oh, other dogs can have relationships with people in these strange, bizarre places.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's a good idea. Thank you very much for calling and good luck, Karen. Appreciate it. Ernest in Vernon County, it's your turn. Hi, Ernest.
Hello, guys. Well, I've spent my time on hold getting more and more nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous, although that never helps. Don't, you know, like the doctor says, just relax.
And then struggled with, well, if I call her Trish, we've never really met, but I consider you family because the NPR and the radio is on all day and all of the hosts.
Ernest, you can call me whatever you want. I am just happy to be able to talk to you.
Well, I got to meet Larry at the Energy Fair and mm-hmm. thank him for the years of the enjoyment that he's given to me and all the others, I'm sure. And it's odd that you're on. I just about fell over. I had a thought of you this morning that, darn, she's not on the air. I can't ask her this question.
Oh, it was a premonition. Well, I'm dying to hear your question.
What's the question?
Yeah, I built it up. And thank you for all the years of
you're welcome. Thank you.
Of enjoyment, and I learned so much from it. My question has to deal with treats, and a prime example was the guy who had the older dog, and he said, well, just fill a Kong full of his favorite treats, and when you want to leave the room, you wake up in the middle of the night and you want to leave the room,
okay,
just leave it for him and go to the other room. Well, any time I've used my dog's favorite treats, he's not going to play ball. I've got treats. You can't turn their smell off. If I had a Kong in the room all night, he wouldn't sleep. He would sit there in anticipation of it. Do you see where I'm coming from? The smell of the trying to train a dog with treats, they don't act normally.
I understand.
They're sucked into the smell of that treat, and they're not going to do exactly what they would normally do in a play situation.
Yeah, I do understand. And there are a couple of ways that I would respond to that. One is with a Kong. The idea is to put the treat inside the Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the treats. The Kong has the treats. So the dog, you're right about that smell being this huge, overpowering sense. So in that sense, there's no problem because the smell is inside the Kong where the food is. And so there's no competition there. When you're using treats for training, you bring up a really good point, Ernest, which is that dogs can, if you don't know how to use them, dogs can become so excited and so overwhelmed that they sort of can't think and they sort of lose their heads completely. The trick is to learn how to use them and to teach your dog early on that if you do what I ask, then you'll get a treat. But you only get it when you do what I ask. And you can start really easily. You might want to start with a treat that your dog doesn't become hysterical about. You know, you always need to sort of monitor and mm-hmm. customize, basically. So if I was trying to train Larry to do something very difficult and that I really needed his attention about, I would have lobster here. But I wouldn't have a plate of lobster, a whole lobster right in front of him, because then he'd just put his head down and start eating the lobster. I would have a little tiny piece of lobster in my hand, and I would let him see it, and I would say, Larry, what am I going to train Larry to do? Larry, get another collar on the line, you know. And as soon as he did, then I would give him a piece of lobster. So the idea is that you're absolutely right. If you just sort of have this huge amount of food that you don't manage and control, you end up with a dog who's hysterical. But they learn, Ernest, they learn really, really fast. If like right now, one of Willie's favorite tricks is get back. And I love get back. Everybody should teach their dog get back, because It's great. You drop something, you can say get back. They're getting too pushy and rude with a little child who came to visit, you can say get back. They're running over you at the door, you can say get back. They get a stiff look on their face when you see another dog, you can say get back. It's a wonderful, wonderful cue, which every dog knew. And with Willie, it's like a circus trick. So I say, Willie, get back. And he gets back with his happy, happy look on his face, and then I toss him a treat. And so he's learned that if he gets back, he gets a treat. So that's the trick. If a dog becomes hysterical, and I've seen a few dogs who are like that, like if you use chicken, say, well, then you just stamp it down and use some kind of a grain-based small biscuit. Don't use a big biscuit. They're too big, you know, but something small you can break up into little pieces. So that's the trick. And if you want to come and teach Larry to do something with
lobster,
I'm going to be right here to watch. We'll put it on YouTube.
Thanks, Ernest, for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Oh, boy, lobster. David and Toma, we're going to you now. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I'm from Minnesota. We're very proud of our public radio in Minnesota, but I have to say there's something very warm and personal about Wisconsin Public Radio, so I'm passing through and enjoying that.
Thank you.
I heard early on Patricia's back from Africa, and when I was in 8th and 9th grade, I went to a boarding school in sort of remote central Tanzania and near Kiomboi, and every morning for several weeks, I awoke to the sound of a pack of howling wild dogs, and to this day, and I would wake and realize I was away from my family, and I was just 12, 13, and was homesick, and so to this day, I live on a lake in Minnesota, and on the south side of the lake, many evenings I can hear a pack of coyotes howling this sweet little high-pitched voice sound, and I get this feeling of homesickness. I'm sort of curious, what do you think those wild dogs were howling about in the morning for? Coyotes howl in the evenings.
Yeah,
boy, that's a really good question. I have one for you too, which is compare the sound of wild dogs howling, because I never heard them howl with coyote howling. So I'll answer yours first. And here's what I know about African wild dogs, which is that they howl for the same general reasons that wolves and coyotes howl. Two functions, basically. One is group cohesion, and the other is territorial broadcasting. But African wild dogs hunt most. They're not quite crepuscular. They hunt most at night, but they hunt sort of early evening or late evening, I would say, early night, and then in the morning. So it could be a rallying call to get everybody to go out hunting, because they do a lot of hunting early in the morning. They're quite successful, by the way. They have the highest success rate of any carnivore, 80%.
Wow.
80% of their attempts at a kill are successful. They're amazing animals. They're just amazing.
Compared to a lion, it's
very, very high success rate. So what is African? What I saw is I saw adults regurgitating food for the puppies. And so, but I didn't hear them howl. What is African wild dog, which, by the way, are not dogs. So they're very poorly named. They're canids, but they're not dogs. But what does it sound like compared to coyotes?
Coyotes seem sweet and happy and sort of celebrating the night, and the wild dogs in the morning sounded a little crazy, a little insane, and there was this wildness to it that was really disconcerting for a kid who's homesick.
Oh,
I'm not in Minnesota anymore.
Well, you know, hyenas sound crazy to me. I have heard hyenas, and they talk about laughing hyenas, the spotted hyena. Larry, they sound like ready to be committed. It's like a stereotype of somebody laugh like a crazy person. It's like, yeah, well, that's a hyena.
That's a hyena.
A hyena will also make this noise. They go,
whoop,
whoop. And they do that more often than the laughter, I think.
We heard that. We heard that quite a bit. Whoop. I will stop now. I promise.
Thank you so much, David.
Yeah, that was fascinating to hear.
That was great. Thank you so much for calling. Some emails. I want to get through a couple of emails, too. Lori emailed us and said, 3 weeks ago, my older male cat, 15 years old, had three teeth removed. So that was 3 weeks ago. Still has some swelling out of his cheek and an eye. Occasionally, his eye runs. He's not eating much hard food yet, but plenty of soft food. Should I be concerned and return to the vet for a checkup?
Oh, yeah. That's easy. Absolutely. Yeah. I would be there in a microsecond. I would be there yesterday. Yeah, that definitely requires a trip to the vet.
And here's one. Excuse me. You mentioned Kongs earlier. James in New Berlin emailed and said, I heard you mentioned Kongs. I was wondering if this is that red beehive-looking thing that you put treats in. If so, I got an email a while back about a yellow lab that was using one of those and had his tongue sucked into the toy and had to have his tongue removed afterwards because it had swollen up so big.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. It's not a Kong. That did not happen with a Kong, and here's the difference. Kongs, who have been around forever, by the way, and I use every morning with my dogs. When we wake up in the morning, there's a stuffed Kong that comes out of the freezer, gets made the night before, and Willie and Lassie each get their frozen stuffed Kong, and I then get to lie on the couch and write in my journal and meditate and read and do my yoga and do whatever rather than having to play with this young rambunctious dog, and Lassie just gets to be lucky. But here's the trick. Kongs have a hole in the bottom, and they have a hole in the top. The problem with the toy that you were talking about is that there was only one hole so that a vacuum could be created. So this this tragic, tragic story that a lot of us know about is a dog got his tongue stuck, had to be amputated, just a horrible, horrible story. So no toy should have a hole in it without a second hole that provides air to get in on the other side. And Kongs, absolutely, this was not the Kong product. This was a whole different toy.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very important thing to look at. You know, toy safety, Karen and I talk about toys in Play Together, Stay Together, and toys are so important to find. Ones that, one, your dog really loves that you didn't spend a fortune on.
Yeah.
Because you can spend, spend a fortune on toys, and your dog would rather play with a cardboard box or something. But also, there are a lot of toys out there that really aren't safe. Talk to veterinarians. They're doing abdominal surgeries all the time about dogs who get pieces of toys. A lot of the toys that you buy in supermarkets, frankly, a lot of them, they're made of plastic that can easily be swallowed. You can easily get dogs who either choke or swallow something. That one of the keys with toys is to get a toy besides these. If it has a hole, make sure it has two. Besides that, remember the dogs do their chewing on their back molars, their molars and their premolars. All molars are back, so that was redundant.
Sure.
On their molars and their premolars at the back of their mouth. If a toy is small enough, you want to get a toy. If they're hard chewers, then you want to get a toy that's big enough that it's really hard for them to get that into the back of their mouth and get their whole mouth around it and use the sort of extreme force of their jaw pressure. That's something else to think about.
Now, in terms of play in your CD, Dog Play, which is understanding play between dogs and between dogs and people, tell me about what you've got in that CD.
Well, yeah.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Actually, what it is, it's a seminar. So it is not National Geographic. I want to just tell you right now. It's not a produced seminar, sort of me and, Willie, et cetera. It's a video of a half-day seminar that I did in California that was really fun. I spent all summer working on it. It was really fun to work on and to give. And it's divided into basically three sections. One is, what do we know about play in dogs? And there's starting to be some really interesting research, beyond what is play, putting play in perspective, how common is it, who does it? But there's some fun new research on play in dogs that is very informative and helpful for us to know. That's section one. The second one is about play between dogs. And I have lots of videos of what's appropriate play, what's inappropriate play. So I have lots of videos. So watch these two dogs. Now tell me, is this appropriate? Or is it not? And if it's inappropriate, what is it that what's happening? What is that dog doing? So that's the second section. And the third is on play between people and dogs, how to use it to your advantage and how to avoid sitting in my office crying because we're talking about, I can't tell you how common it is. It's really sad. We don't play the same as dogs do. And I think the biggest difference is that dogs pause. And I think, I'm speculating, it's the way they monitor their arousal levels. They're not grown-ups. They're not grown-up humans. And monitoring emotions is harder when you're a dog and harder when you're a kid. Kids have recess and they have playground monitors.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be a monitor. Dogs who play well together pause a lot and play. And I show a lot of videos of dogs play, 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 pause. Play, 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 pause. Play, 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 pause. But people, adults, we don't pause.
We don't pause.
And so we need to learn to do that. So anyway, that's the last section. It was great fun to do. And so that's what it's about.
And how do we get that, by the way?
Oh, you can just go to my website. Just go to my name. Go to patriciamcconnell.com. It's on the website. And also, if I could, I almost forgot, but I don't want to because I'm so excited about it. I get to talk about cats and play and cats and everything we know about cats at the Humane Animal Welfare Society, the shelter, the Humane Society in Waukesha, September 17th, Thursday evening. I'm going to be talking about cats, who they are, what we know about them, and how to take what we understand about their natural history, their ethology, and relay it to having the relationship you want with your cat.
Oh, and that's the 17th?
The 17th, Thursday night, the 17th of September. I love getting asked to talk about cats. So besides talking about dogs and dog play, I get to talk about cats too.
And what's the, and how do people sign up for that?
You can go to my website again, okay. Go to patriciamcconnell.com or go to the Humane Animal Welfare Society in Waukesha.
All right. Well, let's take another call. Amy in Menominee Falls, let's go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm. Since you said you like talking about dogs and cats, I actually have a third species that I'm wondering if you have experience with. He's a pot-bellied pig, and he's 15 months old, and I'm having a little issue with him. He was born in a petting zoo environment, so I think he had a very traumatic experience with people when he was a baby. And for the first 2 to 3 months of his life, he wasn't with his mother, but he was with his litter mates. So my husband and I adopted him at about 3 years old, and we had to spend the first month or two desensitizing him to us because he was just so fearful. He would hide in his little corner. We gave him blankets and treats, but he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't even come out. And after about a month, he started approaching us. We would just sit in the corner with yummy treats all around us and wait for him to come to us. And eventually he came and he ate the treats and he got to the point where we could hand feed him. And he really came around nicely.
Good.
Yeah. And so then he even got so comfortable that he began rooting with me. Like, he pushes his little snout into my hand repeatedly. He loves doing that. And he loves belly rubs from my husband. So when my husband touches him, he kind of falls over and loves those belly rubs. But then he got so comfortable with us, so I was able to clicker train him. So now he knows about teen tricks, and he's so smart, and he's just a lot of fun. So here's the problem. After he became really comfortable, he started snapping or kind of like sideswiping his head at my husband from time to time. It's like he'll take a belly rub, but then when he's sick of it, he'll stand up and like snap at him.
Hmm.
Or my husband will try petting him, and our pig's body language is kind of like, I don't want to be pet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see it coming, and he'll whip that head and he'll try to bite him.
But he loves you, right?
I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah.
But he loves you, right? He doesn't do this to you?
And he loves me.
Yeah.
Okay. We got about a minute.
Yeah, well, it's pretty simple. It's not pretty, but it's pretty simple. This is the age at which this animal would the males would start competing with each other. The males would start being sort of put out of the group, as it were. So this is partly about gender. This is partly about, I think he's mate guarding you. I do. I think part of what's going on is that he's mate guarding you. The bad news is that the number of pot-bellied pigs who get into trouble at this age is huge. I mean, they can be really problematic. I would call somebody in. I think you need a coach. That's my only quick answer. But basically, you might want to switch who does a lot of the caretaking, see if that will help. Think about what is the best consequence of a snap. Don't use physical punishment. That would be the last thing I do. But you want to think about what kind of consequence there is there. So good luck. I don't have enough time to go any farther, but good luck.
Good luck. And thank you very much for calling. And Patricia, thank you so much. It's great to talk. You'll be back again, I hope.
Well, I certainly hope so. It's fun, Larry. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And Patricia McConnell will be back. We'll have her back and we'll do this again. I'm sorry. We didn't get to the many, many emails and the many, many phone calls, but that's always the way it works. But I promise we will have her back. And I can also promise you that tomorrow is another edition of Garden Talk. Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski will be our guest. Stay with us.